The debate over torture can provoke learned commentary, outraged opinion, and at the Public Theater in New York, laughs. Playwright Christopher Durang takes a cast of unlikely characters and throws them headlong into door-slamming hilarity that mines the previously untapped vein of comedy based on enhanced interrogation. Christopher Durang's plays include Beyond Therapy, The Actor's Nightmare, The Marriage of Betty and Boo, and Betty's Summer Vacation. His new satire is called Why Torture is Wrong and the People Who Love Them. If you'd like to talk with him about his work and why it works, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Playwright and actor Christopher Durang joins us now from our bureau in New York. His latest production, Why Torture is Wrong and the People Who Love Them, is playing at the Public Theater through May 10th. Nice to have you on the program with us today.
Thank you.
And a comedy about torture? How did you come up with that idea?
Well, I have to admit I didn't sit down and say I'm going to write a comedy about torture. And, torture isn't funny. However, I've taken to describing the play a little bit to people as in the vein of Dr. Strangelove, because Nuclear Holocaust wasn't funny either. But somehow that film was. And so it's about looked at a different way. I actually think the play is a comedy about how we as Americans have responded to the war on terror, with terrors of our own and with wild disagreements among each other and so forth. But I can't defend saying that terror itself is funny.
No, and yet it plays a central part in the play, but it is presented in such an absurd manner. It is disturbing. Nevertheless, it's a little like cartoon kind of violence.
Well, it is. That's true. And also there's a there's a character in the. Can I tell a little bit of the story?
Oh, absolutely.
The heroine Felicity wakes up in a motel room with someone she doesn't recognize and assumes she's had a drunken one night stand. Not something she usually does. And the man. It turns out they've gotten married. And that the man's name is Zamir, and which he claims is Irish, but in any case,
funny, he doesn't look Irish.
No, and he doesn't look Irish. So she then tries to figure out how to get an annulment of this crazy marriage, but he gets very angry when she tries to do that. So she goes to her parents for help, and her father turns out to be very well. I guess I'll characterize him as a right wing nut.
You wrote him, so you can characterize him.
And he becomes, understandably, suspicious of her husband and fears he may be a terrorist. And as the play goes on, it turns out that he is a member of the shadow government that all of us don't quite know about, and that he has inside connections to people in the Pentagon, and that they're doing a lot of their own interrogation and their own, checking out who is and isn't the terrorist. And
it's one of those things you never thought would be outsourced.
So... He works with several other people in the shadow government, and one of them is a sweet Republican woman who has a crush on him, but otherwise buys into all his stuff. And they talk about John Hughes' torture memo, which was leaked to the press in 2004, which is why it's in my play. I didn't put it in
writing
yesterday.
Writing it last week, yeah.
Right? And however, in the midst of it, I write intuitively and don't outline, which they don't like in Hollywood, but I'm allowed to do it in theater. And in any case, when I was writing the play, I wanted the woman Hildegard to go to a restaurant to tape a conversation, and I was going to write it so she misunderstood something which she thinks is a terror attack, which triggers the kidnapping and the terror. I'm sorry, in the...
And the torture.
Torture, thank you. But I led into it by saying that a different operative, and they all have these silly names. The father goes by 310 to Yuma, and she goes by Scooby-Doo. And there's another person named Looney Tunes who is a member of the shadow government, and he has followed the possible terrorist to the restaurant. But his nickname is based on his Tourette syndrome, that he keeps making roadrunner sounds and lines from cartoons. He can't control it. So he is part of the... interrogation. There are two interrogation scenes. The first one threatens violence. The second one actually has some violence. And I must say, when I watched it in rehearsal and then in performance, having this crazy character in a fedora who keeps going beep, 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 and I told putty cat and all that kind of silly stuff, it's cartoonish, but it makes it makes it lunatic and farcical at the same time that it does attempt to, as writing and production, get to a genuine place of discomfort, because in the second interrogation scene, the father is going to about to do some genuine bodily harm to the kidnapped person who isn't the terrorist and doesn't know anything. And he indeed tells the father what he wants to know. He's made it clear that he believes there's an attack, that they've misunderstood something he said at the restaurant.
Right.
So anyway.
So he makes a false confession just to stop the torture.
Yes, and of course, just in the news the other day, we were reading that that entity from Sear sent the lawyers in the Department of, Rumsfeld's office saying that the bad thing about torture is that you get unreliable information, that people will say whatever they feel they need to stop the pain. I mean, that's a little bit common sense, but...
And you speak about it in a very matter-of-fact way, and obviously this is something that has concerned and outraged you over the years, yet you present your arguments against it in the form of a comedy.
Well, I've always written comedy. I like to make the audience laugh, and I guess I wanted... I don't know. It didn't cross my mind to do it in a serious way. I, by the way, did see the movie Rendition, which I liked better than the critics did, but that told the story in a very serious way, and I thought a good way. I don't know. I've just always written comedy. The other thing about comedy is it gives you a sort of distance to stuff. It makes you there's some breaking of the fourth wall where characters will discuss what's happening sometimes, and in the end of the play, I don't too much want to give away exactly, but the main character, the sensible daughter for Felicity, who is only trying to get away from this incorrect marriage, when the play darkens into actual torture, she sort of insists that they relive previous scenes so that it doesn't end badly.
You break down not only the fourth wall, but the barriers of time and space. So be prepared for an interesting evening. Anyway, let's get some callers in on the conversation. Our guest is Christopher Durang, the author most recently of the play Why Torture is Wrong and the People Who Love Them. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Rick is with us calling from Woodburn in Oregon.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Good, good. I have a comment, and if there's time, a quick question. My comment is that I appreciate, and I think there's a lot of us who really appreciate, you folks who use a lighthearted format to address serious subject matter and make us laugh a little bit, but also get us to thinking. And I think that it becomes a little more thought-provoking, maybe sinks in a little bit more when it's addressed in a lighthearted format such as that. And we really appreciate that.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Thanks.
And you had one other point?
Well, the only other thing was I'm a truck driver. I drive over the road. It's very hard for me to figure if I'm going to be any place where I can catch a play. Are you going to be playing any of the truck stops?
Well, there's a fourth wall you haven't considered.
Well, you know, I have a nightclub act where I sing. I should really look into some truck stops, but it wouldn't be the same play.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate that. And
well, your next overnight in New York, Rick, the Public Theater.
Okay. All right, thank you much.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the phone call. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Jonathan. Jonathan with us from Fairfax, California.
Hi.
Hey.
I just wanted to say I was actually a little disappointed. I saw the show at the Public when I was in New York last week. And, you know, I just, from the get-go, it was a little cartoonish, a little flippant. I had a hard time really, identifying or sympathizing with any of the characters. And so I felt like what could have really delivered more meaningful commentary on, on torture and on, you know, the whole right wing mindset. It just kind of flew past. I felt like most of the audience, and I don't know. And also felt like there were some inside jokes about theater and stuff, and that also had a distancing effect. But I guess my main thing was just that, yeah, it just didn't really hook me in, and I also felt like the use of violence felt a little gratuitous to me, especially towards the woman, towards the fiance, whatever, the woman in the show. It was hard to take, and it didn't feel sort of justified or anything. So I came out of there disappointed, and I don't know. I just wanted to express that.
Okay. Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Obviously, some people are going to like it. Amongst them, I'd say the great majority of the critics in New York, Christopher Durang, really loved the show and I guess you're always going to get victories.
I was going to ask him what violence he meant toward the woman. There's sort of an emotionally abusive relationship, but not a physically abusive one, so at least with the mother.
We're talking.
Anyway, but yes, you know, different taste of things. When I was young, with my play Beyond Therapy, which you mentioned it, in an early preview, we had an audience talk back, and most of the audience really liked it, and this one person just didn't. And at a certain point, I said, well, tell me what plays you do like. And I'm going to date myself, but the soap opera parody, Mary Hartman was on and was a big hit with Louise Lasser, and it's very funny send-up of soap operas. Mm-hmm. And I asked him if he liked that, and he said, no, I hate it. And I said, oh, well, then, you know, I'm never going to write something you're going to like.
Stay away from the Durang brand. Christopher Durang is our guest, the playwright and actor. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Racine. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, from San Antonio.
Yes, you've pronounced it correctly. Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
I actually had a comment, and I actually had a question as well. I wanted to commend your playwriter for writing such a wonderful play. I think that's a phenomenal thing to do, especially in these times. I actually had a question. Have you had any negative or positive feedback from either one of the political parties? Obviously, we've had such a controversial issues from the last office, i.e. from the Bush administration, from what he's done. And I was wondering if you had any comments from either, again, Republican or Democrats that have said, good job, bad job, with this play that you've put on, from either one of the political parties or anybody, for that matter, with, again, Democrats or Republicans.
So have you invited John Yoo to the show?
Pardon me?
I was talking to Christopher, but go ahead.
Okay.
John Yoo is mentioned in the play. Well, you know, I've not had any official people from either political party say anything to me. I've had a lot of, you know, I guess I should be honest. I think it's mostly Democrats who would enjoy the play. I assume.
Not exactly going into the lion's den with this one.
Yeah, right. And I've had some people just refer to feeling a sense of comic catharsis about, because as I say, it is ultimately it's about the war on terror, which was our last 8 years, and not that that's over, and that the Islamic threat is a real one, but in any case, I have not, to answer your question,
okay,
had any official
okay
response from okay anyone.
Racine, okay, thanks very much for the call.
Well, thank you. Hopefully you'll be getting that letter of recommendation from Obama, and maybe you'll get some more people to even say your play.
I think at this point we all want to avoid any letters from the administration, any administration ever. Let's see if we can go to Jesse. Jesse with us from Conway, Arkansas.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering, I wanted to get the playwright's view on a statement I have in front of me. It's a M.C. Bradbrook, and he states that tragic comedy is an appropriate genre for our own modern period, because when we witness such works, the muscles of risibility are about to form when suddenly they freeze in horror. And I was just wondering if you felt like tragic comedy was like a new form of expression, sort of like postmodern irony, or have you been personally influenced by other works in this genre?
Well, you know, I think I like the idea of tragic comedy. Or what I sometimes, growing up, I would have called black comedy. And I was influenced, I mean, to jump way back, Voltaire's Candide is a very dark comedy. And it's also cartoonish. But it ends, you know, there's terrible warfare and people are killed. And then they come back alive as if they haven't died. And I was very influenced by the British playwright Joe Orton, who wrote very dark farces. And then mentioning Dr. Strangelove, which I think goes back to 1962, is, mm-hmm. you know, a brilliant comedy about the arms race between America and Russia, and a worst-case scenario where, by mistake, missiles are launched. Oddly, at the same time, there was a serious movie, also good, called Failsafe, with the identical plot, but just told straight. And Dr. Strangelove, which I think probably will live longer than that movie, was so inventive and did make us see things in a different way. I mean, Peter Sellers is that crazy German ex-Nazi scientist who's very unforgettable.
And Jesse, he would not want you to leave without mentioning also Pirandello, because structure plays a part in the back part of the show.
Oh, okay. All right,
Jesse.
Well, thank you very much. This is actually a question for a final I'm taking, so I was just
wondering
your take on it. Yeah, and I was working on the final, and I was listening to your broadcast, and I just couldn't resist. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. You're a footnote now, Christopher Durant.
That's right. I hope you get an A.
What are you working on now?
You know, I'm not working on anything now. There's a play that I started around the same time with the... Actually, even a similar title in a way. It's called Consensus, or Should We Just Kill Each Other? And I'm wondering whether to continue with it, because it's not about torture, and it would be different characters, but it is coming from the same feeling of, oh gosh, this blue state, red state anger between us, you know, is not yet healed. I mean, it's greatly helped by the fact that the moderates went over to Obama and frankly saw through what was crazy and worrisome about the Bush administration. But, you know, listening to talk radio, you know, the other opinion is still definitely out there.
We have to end it here, but thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Christopher Durang joined us from our bureau in New York. His latest play is called Why Torture is Wrong and the People Who Love Them. If you see it, grammarians, you'll understand. It's at New York's Public Theater through May 10th. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, it's overlooked and underfunded, but epilepsy affects more than 3 million Americans. We'll talk about living with that disease tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cohn, NPR News in Washington.